Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Welcome back, folks, to your ex-conservative radio hour. My name is Tony Venuti. Each and every day, it's the culture, stupid, bringing you a free stream of consciousness. Reverse engineering, how shall I say, the pop culture trampling our traditional culture. Who is the Tea Party? The Tea Party are us. The Tea Party is I am my country. The Tea Party undefined. But first, I want to say a happy birthday to my Facebook friends out there. Happy birthday, Adam Cantor. Kathy Ryan. David Nierhood, Donna Arthur, Douglas Gibbs, Gary Arbiter, Gene Chancellor, Lisa Morton-Pennell, Mary Brennan, happy birthday, and Todd Anderson. Ah, my face. My lofty Facebook friends. Oh, Facebook, we're friends. Where new meaning is given to the word friends, huh? You think if somebody has 3,000 Facebook friends, it's as good as one real friend? How many, it's just like a fraction, isn't it? It's just like mathematics, isn't it? Some of its parts being greater than the whole. How many, ounces does it make a pound, right? How many pounds does it make to take a ton? Well, how many Facebook friends does it take to have a friend? And can you really ever count on them? But, oh, you'll probably find someone that we'll say at any given time that, here I am, your friend, here I am. What do you, oh, you mean you need something? Uh-oh, you better be careful. But I shouldn't, no, I'm being cute. Because, I love Facebook. I do, I spend a lot of time on it. It's my way of getting what I'm trying to do with this show out. And as you know, what I do is I've come to you from the 1950s. From the very beginning I have come. And I see that, I see that we've really been had. I've been watching it, you see, folks. I've been watching this, born 1950, from outside of Brockton, Massachusetts, outside of Boston. Born on the right side of town, but on the wrong side of the street. I actually grew up with those trust fund babies, the spoiled brats. Are liberals today simply spoiled brats of the 50s and the 60s? I think that's all they are. Hey, Alicia, nice to see you. I'm going to go on and read some of your strings. I had it right here. Alicia Ketcher-Campbell. I dare not to pronounce it badly, Alicia. I'm not really good. She's got a post here about Friend Watch, was created to give teens an instant, virtual, and complete anonymous way to share vital knowledge with the right people. Oh, and she likes, she's got... Michael Savage demonstrates the horror of partial birth abortion. Now, how he can do this? Now, he's doing this on TV, right? Okay, so I won't play it. If he was just going to do the audio, I'd play it, because obviously if he can do the audio for us, but it looks like you need a actual demonstration. We're not trying to go through with that. But you're listening to where each and every day, folks, I try to bring to you the sensibilities that you won't hear in the mainstream media. You know, the fox in the hen house. The people who have been telling this for many years. I've been watching it since a child. As a matter of fact, I think the reason I ended up in prison was I was programmed to. I think I was programmed by the media at an early age to go to jail. I think I was programmed by the media at an early age to disrespect authority. I really do. You remember, I saw a cartoon. And you've probably seen something similar, at least. But the bottom line is they had this cartoon character walk by a white picket fence. And unbeknownst to him yet, but the audience could see, there was a hole in the wall. No big deal. You know, it's a hole in the wall, right? The cartoon character's walking. But on top of it, for only the audience to see, were these characters' words, if you will, that stated, "Do not look in this hole." Now, I'm a kid. I'm 5, I'm 6, I'm 7, but I'm getting the jive, you know, I'm getting to sense civility, I'm getting to sense society, I'm being bred, aren't I? As I learn, as we all learn through life. But I said to myself as a child, I said, now why'd they do that? You know he's going to want to look in that hole. You know, me, I always had the intuitive, it was human nature. And we know that, but there's a manipulator here. There's someone that's being, see, the person that's told not to look in the hole has something done to them. They're having something done to them when that's suggestive. And this is what I'm getting at with the media that I've been watching for the past 50 or 60 years. Unbeknownst to me that I was developing, how shall I say, a free stream of consciousness, including wisdom, which is what? What's wisdom? Do you know what wisdom is? Everybody's got their little opinion of what wisdom is, sort of like love. Well, wisdom is knowledge and experience. Knowledge and experience. I'll teach you that a tomato is a fruit, but unless you learn it firsthand or through somebody else's experience, you might want to put that fruit, you might want to put that tomato in a fruit salad. Well, there comes a little bit level of just knowing something's a fruit. You need a little bit more than that. It's a little bit dual-dimensional, at least. I think true wisdom comes from a sense of noesis that I was blessed with. Look that up. That's a great word to look up, noesis. N-O-E-S-I-S. You want to talk about knowing? Yeah? Noesis, it provides that intuit that Aristotle, Plato, Socrates. Do you know which one comes first? Which one comes first, Aristotle or Socrates or Plato? Well, Plato's always in the middle, okay? And then reverse the order of Socrates and Aristotle. Aristotle, the letter A is first, reverse it. So he's last. Socrates came first and Plato stayed in the middle. Isn't that a neat little lesson? I never knew that. I need little things like that because my short-term memory isn't all what it should be. Well, I'll tell you, intelligence. Isn't intelligence sort of mistakenly, how shall I say, confused with intelligence? Just because you can remember something? That's actually scary, because you can get people, and that's what the media does, you can program people into remembering anything and having them believe anything. And that's what intelligence idiots are. Because as far as I'm concerned, education without knowledge is programming. Education without knowledge is evil. Because if you're giving them something other than the truth, to which knowledge is by definition, and anything else that they're being taught that isn't the truth, is evil. Is that fair? Education outside of knowledge is evil. Because all you're doing is programming people to remember something you want them ultimately to believe in, don't you? I mean, isn't that what that's really about? we've come from a citizen society where we're concerned about what we think about and the rights that we have and the fact that we're exceptional people that have been granted something by something greater than us here on this earth that isn't controlled by some kind of king or queen, that we, in fact, with the help of the Second Amendment, we own our rights to ourselves and our property, right, with the help of the Second Amendment. Isn't that what it's all about? Because it's about survival, isn't it? Nothing really else matters but survival. Well, we've gone from being a citizen to being a consumer. We've gone from a citizen to being a consumer. I've got Alicia saying, agreed, exactly what the government is. See, I see the government as a parent to the child, as captain, my captain, as something that we look up to them to do the right things by us. And any time they're not doing what's in our best interest, they're in effect evil. They're bad. They're a bad witch or a good witch. Which are you? So we've allowed ourselves through some myths through the 50s and the 60s that I grew up with, which is, I'm so tired of hearing this notion about, oh, your children deserve a better life than one you had. Gosh, they've been, how bad were the past generations that we still have to get better and better? I remember my father thinking, hell, I walked to school, and that was 5 miles. You can walk a mile to school. He didn't have that mentality. I thought he was selfish for that, but, you know, it's sort of like naming your son Sue for about 8 years. It wouldn't actually do any harm because, you know what? Life's tough. Life's tough. You got to get through the tough times. But you see, with the help of the media, and I get off track telling that story about the white picket fence there where I was programmed to do time in the penitentiary. Don't look in this hole. The media has been programming us to misbehave, to do what we should not be doing. Do not look in this hole. This has been the mantra. It's one, in one subtle form or another, through the help of the pop, man, the pop culture, the music, Hollywood, entertainment. Everything used incrementally with one little deathly paper cut at a time, I've been feeling it. Now, unfortunately, to the people that have heard this show before, and I do get more archive listeners than live listeners, where is everybody? Are you feeling lonely in there, Alicia? Oh, come on now. Waters are deep here at the ex-conservative radio hour. No, I'm not a liberal. I know about liberals, though. Because all liberalism is the pushback to good, is the celebration of negative behavior. Liberalism must exist. It's natural law. It's Newton's third law. For each action, there has to be an equal and opposite, unless it's controlled by some kind of barrier principle, something to which, historically speaking, we may have learned from 5,000 years of exceptionalism. Through trial and error, we obtained exceptionalism. It took 5,000 years for somebody to figure it out that they wanted to be the boss of themselves, worship, think, believe, any way they felt like, hey, why not? Why can't I believe like this? Who got the right to tell me I can't? I'm going to go someplace where I can. Boy, that took a lot of gumption, didn't it? Didn't that take a lot of moxie? Taking what those exceptional people did to give up. Alicia says, liberals equals progressives equals socialists equals death of USA. Well, that's socialists and communists. And you know, what was that, let me see. One of the things that I've been putting out there the past day was a little slapdown from Alan West. And we're going to find it right now, and I'm going to cue it up, and we're going to enjoy it. Folks, you're listening to Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day, it's the culture, stupid. Now, check this out. This is probably the best slapdown I've heard. This is Alan West.
Yeah. You were saying ultimately that the terrorists that attack the United States and the people that are attacking America are following the front. And they are following the instructions of their government. So, very simple question. It's not going to take a lot of your time. It's not going to come up with the problem. It's the knowledge. Can you show me what
All right, I'm going to read it for you. Can you show me one verse in this Korean where it said it attacks Americans or is going to attack? Well, of course, it doesn't show any. Oh. My humble apologies. I'm not going to have you sit through this. This is third tier level, well, me directly into the computer, and I can't, no, I'm not going to do that to you. Sorry about it, folks. I should have thought of that as I was, hey, Robert, nice to see you. Welcome to the ex-conservative radio hour. I was showing that slapdown, and let me get the link for you at least, because I didn't want to keep playing it, quite frankly, because it wasn't working, if you know what I mean. Not to send through these little airways, but I'm going to send you this link right here, because this is the best slapdown I've seen. Literally, the best slapdown. I mean, we've seen slapdowns from you know, Gingrich, right? We've seen all those slapdowns, but this is as good as it gets. You know, I don't care whether it's from Sarah, from Michael, from Mark, from Newt. You know, we've seen all the various slapdowns, right? But if this isn't in the top three of anybody's top three, and quite frankly, I think it's the best. Quite frankly, I think it's the best. So please, grab that one. And you know, here's the deal. Do you think it's... You know how life has the pendulum swings, right? See, I think we're at critical mass. I think we're at the kind of critical mass that if we can get Obama to relinquish power when he loses the election, and that's my major concern, right? Because I really don't think he's going to relinquish power. But let's just say that he does and everything goes smooth, and I think what we've seen is, I think we're going to see a new crusade. I don't know if it's going to be as bloody as the crusades of the Dark Ages and so forth. Certainly more high-tech-ish. Certainly the same kind of evil. But we're going to see a swing of the pendulum back to where it needs to be. Keeping it away from where it's dying to go, which is complete socialism, complete communism, complete whatever it is that says no longer to the rights from which you've been endowed by something greater than thou. No, now those rights have been indeed given to you by something like the hand that feeds you. By definition. You want something for free? You want those entitlements? You want those food stamps? You want that welfare? You want that continued unemployment? You want that continued no employment? Well, you know, if they drop out of the labor force, if so many drop out of the labor force, they're going to have to eat. And if we don't take care of them, they're going to lie. They're going to cheat. They're going to steal for their own survival. And we, as a caring people, who made it impossible for them to find work, we must now pay them for not looking for work. So why don't we just call those the no longer in the workforce but will continue to feed you group. The no longer in the workforce but will continue to feed you group. Because if we don't, you're going to be lying, cheating, or stealing, right? Begging, borrowing, or stealing, aren't you? I mean, what else are you going to be doing? So we might as well legitimize it. Oh, while we're at it, let's legitimize the drugs, the prostitution, every one of those things that makes us a moral country. A moral country. Yeah, is it about the economy? A moral country. Is it about the economy? You suckers. Moral country? What morals, baby? The whole point. The whole point is to be part of the earth. Primal. Without any civilization, without any kind of breeding to which a high evolved thought might come from. It's something in which virtue will take hold. No, man. This isn't about the economy. It's about all things moral. I mean, isn't that what Marxism was all about? And doesn't all of this crap lead back to Marxism? All of it, you know? The Frankfurt School,
It's all a paradigm to seize power from capitalists. It's a paradigm to seize power from capitalists because they'd rather empower the 80% that do the 20%. They'd rather empower, enable the 80% that do one-fifth as much as anybody else of the remaining 20% that do the 80%. And they say, no, we're going to make our own football game. We're going to change the rules a little bit because I couldn't win your way. I didn't even want to play the game your way. No, 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 no. We're going to change the rules, baby. So only we can win for, what's the definition of work is, except when you want to prefer to be doing something else, right? I don't want to have to work at being in charge of people. I am me. I am my audience. That which is attracted to you defines you. You're attracted to someone like Karl Marx and everything that he dictates. And yes, it defines you. Hello. Hello. That's all this has been about. That's all this is about. It's like, does the world owe you a living? Or does the world own you after borrowing you a living? After renting you a living? After giving you day-to-day sustenance for the ability not to dare bite the hand that feeds you? I own you, baby. I don't owe you. I own you. That should be the sound of a new 50s tune. I don't owe you, I own you. I don't owe you. No, 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 don't even try, Tony. Do that. Don't do that to them. Don't you? That's my, you know, that's my own head right now saying don't do that to them. Now, Sally thought this is funny anyway. Does the world owe you a living? Does the world owe you a living? How does anybody owe? You just came onto this earth. You haven't produced anything yet. You haven't done anything yet. The only thing you've done is made a mess of things. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. It's a gift. You're going to be bigger and better one day, and pretty soon you're going to help proliferate the success of the earth through your own survival. Through your own survival and success and procreation of even more species, you're going to participate in its success. But right now, you're meaningless. Right now, you're a pain in the butt, you little snotty brat. You're nothing. You got it? You're nothing. What do you mean we owe you? You're making a mess and we owe you? What do you mean we owe you? All right, I'll tell you what. Oh, you can have your way. You want to be like that? This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to feed you. Yeah? Before you even learn how to do it for yourself, I'm going to feed you, little snotty brat. You want something for free because you think I owe you? I'll give it to you. Sure you do. Here, have some food. Here's some substance. Here's whatever you need to barely survive. Here's what you need to just barely live and hang. Here's what you need, and that's all you're going to get. Buy me, give me an I need. I'm not going to hear it, you little spoiled dick. But now 6 months has gone by, and a year has gone by, and many years have gone by, and I've been giving to you just enough. And now that it's time for me to leverage my investment, I've come to tell you where it's at, my friend. Yes, I know you came onto the world thinking that the world owes you a living, and we, in fact, gave you what you wished for. What, you didn't believe that? When someone said, be careful what you wish for, you didn't buy into that? Oh, you should have. That was no joke. That was no cliche. Be careful what you ask for. You're going to get it really good. You're going to get it so good, because here's what I'm telling you right now. You see that? Because you can't live on your own, can you, little snotty brat? You little kid that came in with the world. Oh, the world owes me a living? Really? 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 What did you do except make a mess? Huh? What did you do except make... Well, now guess what? I own you. I own your vote. I own your work. I own your time. I own your specialty. I own your privilege to be alive. I own you. You want the world to owe you a living? You just got paid back in spades, baby. Folks, you've been listening to Tony Venuti rant and rave. It's not like this every day. It's not always this good, but so what? It's not how good it is. It's how bad it's not. Tony Venuti playing you the music from the 60s that sort of brought in the popularity of liberalism, making it sexy, celebrating negative behavior, making all the amateurs going out to the clubs on Friday and Saturday night. I didn't want to mess with y'all. Y'all seem to get in my way. when I was young. People thought I was strange, and I was glad. I'll be right back. Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio.
When you're a stranger, faces look ugly. When you're alone, women seem wicked. When you're unwanted, streets are uneven. When you're down, when you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange. When you're a stranger, faces look ugly. When you're alone, women seem wicked. When you're unwanted, streets are uneven. When you're down,
compliment these days. It's sort of like being called racist, you know. You take it from whence it comes, right? Tell you what, I don't want to be normal. I don't want to be regular. I don't want to be like one of the rest. I don't want to be a network news viewer. I feel like that commercial that I don't know if you could recall ever seeing it or hearing of it. Once upon a time when the libs really started taking over in the days of Carter, when it started to really get to critical mass, because that's when all this stuff really, that's when the House of Cards really started tumbling down. Carter took it to the nth degree and we haven't relinquished yet, but there was an image of an Indian talking about, this was environmental, this was about the water, this was about the land, and it showed an Indian, a Native American, with a tear rolling down his eye. With a tear, and it was a poignant. Oh, man, I tell you, I know what liberals are like, because I thought I was one, too. I thought I was a Democrat, you know? But I always had a problem with people not willing to accept responsibility for getting caught in their own little trick bag. You know, life isn't an easy thing, and when you are outside of the rules and things happen, I always thought that was just natural law, man. Just because the rule shouldn't have been there, the fact that it was and you knew it was, you stepped outside the bounds, you better pay the price and stop whining, you little crap. Now, see, I didn't know that was being conservative. But all those years, I was actually conservative, because to me it was like, Alicia says, good show, topic, Tony. See you soon. Thanks for coming in, Alicia. I love you, baby. I see you all the time on Facebook. Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. I'm telling you, how many friends of Facebook does it take for one serious friend? How about an acquaintance? How many Facebook friends does it take for an acquaintance? How many Facebook friends? I did that early. I'm sorry. I can't. It's the math of something, though. It's the math. Sort of like a small caliber bullet at a high velocity can be pretty deadly, as opposed to a large caliber bullet at a slower velocity.
diametric opposites. From Kathleen Douglas on Facebook, hundreds of Occupy Wall Street training workshops took place this month throughout the country in all 50 states, including small rural areas. Inside one of the training workshops, attendees report that OWS is specifically instructed to go to in any and all Tea Party gatherings, rallies, to be confrontational and to create havoc and disruption. They're being trained to recruit and enlarge their numbers in their assigned geographic locations, to use the correct messaging to incite any opponents engaged in confrontation, employ tactics to evade police blockades, and to create gridlock. Occupy Wall Street workshops are extremely organized and clearly well-funded. Each workshop had a trainer, DVDs, handouts, and a training manual. Occupy Wall Street has deep pockets, and they'll be providing food, water, entertainment, and more. See, this is what they do, these organizers on the left, because what they're really doing here is they're mobilizing a bunch of losers. They're mobilizing people that have time on their hands. We don't have time as conservatives. My God, we're out there working. We're out there working for the very thing that the rights we should be fighting for enables us to do the work that we're doing and to have the success that we have. And these people are trying to tear it down, and what they're using against us is the very thing we need to maintain to keep our success all that time. But now we're being threatened, and we're not seeing it. Meanwhile, these people behind the lines who are well-funded and who are employing masses of people, and what they're doing is they're making a party of this. This isn't just an operation that they're mobilizing. You know, look what I just said. They're providing food, water, entertainment, and more, with gourmet meals, tents, hotel rooms, and printing presses for the newspapers, all of it. Occupy Wall Street is not just a grassroots effort. Do you think it is? I mean, think about it now. How could it be just a grassroots effort? This is organizational, man. This is bureaucratical, man. These are people that are up there. These are people getting paid big money to do good work in terms of the success and efficiency of this evil crap. As demonstrated by the training, resources, and coordination in their workshop, Occupy Wall Street is orchestrated and organized by George Soros' MoveOn.org, Media Matters, Van Jones, Steve Lerner, Francis Fox Piven, Barack Obama, union leaders, which when you think of the unions, you got to be remembering SEIU, right? AFL-CIO, UAW, the Communist Party USA. Imagine that. See, now this is where, once upon a time, it would be treasonous to have the Communist Party implanted as part, but because we bastardized the First Amendment and freedom of speech and rewrote our sort of meaning of the cause, how did we get this way, folks, huh? When was that very, very first paper cut? You ever think about that? How did it all start to take a turn? Shame on us. Eric Holder, Barack Obama, the Democratic Party, including the Marxist Communist members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and the news and print media, are all in bed with OWS. Ordinary Americans cannot and should not expect that the OWS will be held accountable for inciting riots, raping women, as they did the last time around, or any other crimes they may commit. When you recall that under the Obama administration, the new Black Panthers have not been held accountable for the crimes they have committed. Union thugs have escaped their crime. The Muslim Brotherhood is now welcomed into the White House. Drug cartels and vicious gangs are aided and abetted by Obama's Fast and Furious gun program, on and on. So all indicators point to the top coming down on patriotic Americans, not those who commit crimes against them. Thank you, Kathleen Douglas, a Facebook friend. You know, tears running down your eyes. What would the return of, say, a Thomas Jefferson coming back or a George Washington, what would the return look like if Karl Marx was sitting at the same coffee table with them as they looked upon America of today? They're sitting down there. There's Georgie in his full dress. There's Karl in his ever groomed beard. And through a distance, they see the reality of the earth as we're experiencing it today. What would happen? Would George get up and just run a saw through Marx without even thinking? Or would he sit there in fear? Or would he then say, "Well, Mr. Marx, you know, hell of a job. You really did it, baby." And then run the saw through him? Or would he simply, from one professional warrior to the other, although, see, I call playing with people's minds and their fears, I see that as dirty pool. So I'd run the saw through him anyway if I was George. But you got to think, Marx would be sitting there. Oh, man. Those that laugh best, right? Well, I'm getting impatient. You know, I'm going to be laughing at Marx one day soon before. Because, see, I've been seeing Marx all through the 50s. Like I tell you, I'm this free stream of consciousness of this cultural stuff from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. I feel like Marx has had the best of us all those years. Everything that he represents. And I've been seeing it more and more and more and more. We had just come back as a child from the winning of World War II. It's 5 years before I was born, 6 years before I was born. So the country had a few years, didn't it, of seemingly patting itself on the back saying, "Yeah, we're bad, baby. Oh, we're bad. Yeah, we're bad." But it wasn't long before the leftists were able to control people's mind by diverting their minds from the culture and getting them to think more about their success and the economy. It's the economy, so oh, really? All roads ultimately lead back to Marx. Number 15 of the Communist Manifesto. Capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. This is number 15. This is in their dossier. This was in the book, The Naked Communist. This was actually put into the congressional record January 10th, 1963. I had only learned about this recently doing the show about 2 or 3 years ago. It's amazing the kinds of things that I've since academically learned, if you know what I'm saying, because I am not the student per se. I'm your experiential social philosopher, gang. Hey, all I'm doing now is just squeezing my brain and letting come out in this free stream of consciousness all that I know, hopefully in some kind of way that's a little bit informative, entertaining, and somewhat even enlightening. Because, frankly, folks, you haven't got a clue on what I know experiencing evil. To know what I know with these, I've been well aware of what Obama's been up to, and it's unfortunate that it's so crystal clear, but the message is drained because of the media. The media is our enemy. It really is. It's that simple. And we're afraid to confront them because we're all connected to people. We've learned how to feel. We have not been given the chance to learn how to think. And unfortunately, everything that goes in terms of the way of programming, and I mean that in the double entendre sense, the program of the media, they know what they mean when they say programming. They know what they mean when they say network programming. Hey, peasant, nice to see you. Yeah, we're all peasants, we're all revolting. I think it's revolting that no one's revolting yet. That's what I think is revolting. I think I want to puke. You know, we've all been such chumps sitting in our seat of success. I call it status anxiety. The way we've allowed the culture with the heart, with the idea that bad behavior is to be celebrated. Don't look in this hole, that cartoon character I always reference. The media has been training us to accept negative behavior as fun for a long time. Now it's so perverted that we give respect to the class clown, but not to the teacher of the class. Now we give more respect to the class clown than the teacher of the class. In fact, not only do we give comedians more respect than the teacher, we give them a pass when they screw up. Oh, I can say anything I want. I'm just a comedian. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, isn't that glib? Oh, isn't that just cutesy? And I'm looking at people accepting this paradigm, never pushing back up against it. I don't care about perception as reality. You're living a fantasy, okay? It's an illusion. Wake up, little Susie. Wake up. Wake up, man. We're a bunch of chumps. And I've been seeing this premise through the color thing, you know, being Italian, having come back from the collapse of the Roman Empire. I can tell you right now, it looks really currently familiar. It seems very similar to what I see going on right now is what I experience coming off the fall of the Roman Empire. Oh, yeah, it's fresh in my brain. Uh-huh. Yeah, I reincarnated. Come on, I'm Italian. I'm Sicilian. I'm a black Italian. I'm the Italian nigger, Sicilian. Yeah, I can say anything I want. I'm just an ex-con. If Bill Maher can say anything he wants because he's just a comedian, come on, man. 15 years in and out of a dozen penitentiaries. My first prison movie that I saw was The Longest Yard. When I learned that it was cool to be a prisoner. Well, man, you're a bad boy. Hey, it's cool. Gosh, who was I watching them celebrate last night on the History Channel? One of the Hollywood stars who was a bad girl who liked bad boys. Oh, my God. Give me a break. I wanted to puke, okay? If everything is anything art, you know, I don't want the amateurs out there messing with me, all right? Bad behavior needs to be bad behavior. Good behavior needs to be good behavior. And we can't diffuse the two and delete. And pretty soon, before you know it, we've got water to the wine, just like our race, just like our culture, just like who we are. The whole notion about us being racist, for instance. Do you know what? You're damn right we are. We all are. We should be. It's about who you are. Come on, man. There's only two kinds of people in this world, Italians and those that want to be Italian. Come on. That's not racist. What's wrong with that? Now, being a bigot, that's something else. See, even this ass premise, right from the get, man, right out the gate, huh? We've been believing because you've allowed yourself to accept the whole idea that to see yourself as special and to be the best is, how shall I say, counterintuitive, that of a good and moral person. Baloney! You see it in the natural world all the time. Familiar, like a family. I'm familiar with you. I know opposites attract, but that's another day. That's another story, isn't it? Now, we're talking about the whole human nature of being more comfortable with those who you're familiar with. We hear reports just this weekend of, because of established environmental rules with airplanes around airports so as not to endanger the birds, we've now learned that over the past 20 or 30 years, there's been an uptick, a major uptick, in airport
plane crashes due to bird strikes, the very bird strikes that have been an uptick since we've changed the regulations so that more of them could live, so that more of them could down some airplanes, so that more of them could live, and so that more of them could down some more airplanes. All of these unforeseen circumstances to try to control Mother Nature. But the point I'm making is they'll go out of their way to protect the unity of a bird, but they won't accept the fact that we have a certain unity, a certain social structure, a certain order that you should at least have some kind of respect and regard to. Let's understand that the invalid premise that anybody is a racist, that we all are, like, can we just accept that? It's human nature, man. It's the kind of human nature that, if allowed, conservatives can understand. I mean, we've been brainwashed. It's just that simple. No, we're not bigots. Not if we're of virtue, right? I mean, if we're of virtue, we're certainly not bigots. So therefore, I suggest the following. Ask your black brethren, someone you can talk to, someone that can talk to you intellectually, honestly. Ask them if they think they have any white in them at all. You know these white blacks are like the white Hispanics? Well, you know the white blacks are like Obama? You think he's got any white in him? Alex Haley found out, you know, I remember in the 70s, I was in prison and I was watching Roots, or one of the things where they interviewed him, and he talked about when he went to Africa to do his research, he never realized how un-African he was, that he almost felt ashamed for thinking that he could claim himself to be even that of his ancestor. And it was a humbling experience. You know, we are a collective sum of our parts, are we not? And no matter what parts, we cannot reject one for the other. If we have mixed heritage, then I think we should all give credibility to that which makes us some of what we are. That's why I don't resent things or regret things. I don't regret anything because, to me, each thing that I've absorbed, either be it good, bad, or otherwise, is part and partial to who I have become. So why would I want to regret something, especially when I found I became is pretty cool, okay? You know, I got the kind of self-esteem and cockiness that says, yeah, I'd like me just the way that I am. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, I wish I was that. But get over it. It ain't going to happen, right? That isn't going to happen. I don't know. Where am I going with all this? Where am I going with all this? I don't know. All right, hang on a second. Let's see what I'm doing. Okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna tap on some of this race stuff, okay? We're so all afraid to talk about it. The left used it against us, this manipulated guilt that I've been seeing as an outsider, as an Italian, not white or black, all this guilt that they made those of success, and quite frankly, it's just like any other profiling. Most people of success, when identified in the 50s and the 60s, were a high majority white. Oh, there were some blacks, there were some Hispanics, but mostly white, right? And they would make the have and the have-nots, they all of a sudden make people's, they would bring to bear what people's misery were. They brought out the idea of victimization, didn't they? So we all use distinguishing methods for determining what's what. I mean, if we see two animals side by side, and we see that one is more dangerous than the other, maybe I'm looking at a lion, and maybe over here I'm looking at a water buffalo, okay? And I've got a V in the row. I can go either way. One's got the lion I'm gonna come across. The other's got the water. I don't want to encompass any. I don't want to bother any animals. but I'm going to choose one of them. I'm going to choose one of them. Now, based on statistics, does it make me stupid to distinguish what might be more dangerous than otherwise? If I'm driving down the street and I encounter a V in the road and I see a black person and I see a person that isn't black, and I decide to go over to the people that are more that aren't black because I know that black people are scarier than white people, they commit more crimes. If I knew this to be a fact, that black-on-white violence is more substantial than white-on-black, if I know this statistic to be true, where would I veer off? Now, does that make me a racist? Do you see what I'm saying, folks? That's the kind of stuff you want to hear talked about. That's the kind of stuff we need to get comfortable talking about. That's the kind of stuff where, you know, your black brother and your white, it ain't about that. It's about us getting together and understand who's being used by the elitists out there that look to control. Because to me, I don't give a shit. All right, man. Ouch, that hurt. Man, all right, stop pulling my ear. I told you I strained my mother's channeled with me during the show here, and she's pulling my ear. My, all right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. That's how I keep things clean around here, folks. My mother's tough love is something that sort of works. But the point is, we need to be able to talk about this honestly, because there's black people that are good. There's white people that are good. There's black people that are bad. There's white people that are bad. And I don't care about the generalities in the abstract from which we can talk in general terms. What it comes right down to is individuals, does it not? And isn't that what life's all about? So on one hand, we got to have these uncomfortable conversations. On the other hand, we got to love those that prefer to play with love and stay the heck away from those that want to prefer mess with that negative energy stuff, okay? And understand what's what. It's not like that 12-step thing, right? What is it? Have the courage and the basically it has to do with knowing the difference between changing the things you can, accepting the things you can't, and the wisdom to know the difference, right? Essentially, that's what that's all about, isn't it? Personal PM choice. But yet, we got a national dialogue that wants to accumulate masses of people to think massively, put them into a little trick bag of theirs that are able to be, with a push of a button, just with a few choice keywords, they can, how shall I say, mobilize something like Occupy Wall Street. They've taken 50 years for this. This didn't just happen overnight. This isn't about 8 years ago. This isn't about who's been doing this for the past 2 to 6 years. This has been about an accumulation of events that I've been seeing leading up, each little bit, each little paper cut contributing to the bigger cut. And at some point, they're bleeding up their nose, their ears, they're everywhere. Oh, boy. I told you I've been looking out for some work. I've been trying to sell some advertising in the supermarkets, the grocery store carts, and hasn't been going very well for me. I'm a good salesman when I can sell something I would buy, but it's hard for me to sell something that I wouldn't buy. So I think I came to a conclusion Friday that I'm not going to try selling this stuff anymore, because I went on a few presentations. You know, these are $2,500 purchases for a business. You can discount them down to $1,300, $1,400, but they're spending some money. And I've been in the advertising game. That's, you know, that's an okay kind of range to be in. If you've got something that, and these things do get sold. I mean, there's some serious people here, what they call one-time closes. I don't like that whole idea of a one-time close. When you hear somebody shopping for salespeople that are a one-time close, you got to ask yourself, why is that? You know? Why is that? Why do you have to push so hard that you won't have to let the person... You know, because to me, a lot of jokes are funny to you right that moment. I can get you emotionally crazed. But let me see if I can have that joke said to you the next morning and see if it's still funny, right? So every time I saw this one stuff, because anyway, I've gotten away from that. And what I'm doing, though, now, I think I got something I can hang my hat on, because that's something I actually did and performed some years ago. Back in 95, I made these the local schools in Tucson. I made these football schedules laminated with discounts on the back. You've seen them, kinds of things, anyway, like that. Comes in all shapes, all forms. But I might, I'm going to start putting something like this together. I've got a few schools already agreed, made some good phone calls this morning. And I'm also finding out that a lot of these schools' websites aren't taking advantage of the traffic they generate, and I think I can maybe get some web sales inside, because the schools are really hurting now. 20 or 30 years ago, when I would go into anywhere, and I used to have a print shop, and I'd go into these nonprofit groups and say, look, you got a newsletter? Why don't you let me design and print that for you at no cost? Why don't you just let me have some advertising rights and let me sell advertising to the people that are going to want to reach, you know, who's on your list? Of course, this is somewhat archaic now because of the web and so forth and so on, but the principles still apply, and I got a lot of people to do that. And it was pretty easy to do. That's sort of how I started my business, how I kept it going for 20, 25 years, going into Arizona Tourist News. So it looks like I've been experiencing for the past year, and all my life, actually, age discrimination. Well, not all my life, age, you know. Sex discrimination and race discrimination. Absolutely. I've experienced it. Every time something went well for me, it's because I did it on my own. I did it as an entrepreneur. I did it like it's my football. I'm going to play. This is my field that I just took. And if you want to play, here's the deal. Come play. And then I have everybody playing with me. That's what I did with my business. I kept 8 to 12 people going for over 25 years. And now I can't find the most simplest of jobs. I've been on over a dozen interviews already. I would have loved to have come across me when I was looking for salespeople. Gosh, these kids don't want to work anymore. I would have kids come from the university. We are in Tucson. And by the way, beautiful day today. It was 103 degrees yesterday. I would have people come from the university. Oh, I work actual. Fine. They come in sandals and T-shirts for a sales position to which we're going to get anywhere from $300 to $5,000 in advertising in any one kind of contract. And I'm like, what? What lesson did this kid forget? What page didn't he turn in that book of life? So I just look at them coming out of their car and I say, hey, you're over there. You can turn right around and get the heck out of here. And that's what I do. So I'd be glad to find someone like me. And every now and again, I would. I'd hire them. They'd work. Be fine. All that. But damned if I can find work. And the thing about it is there's too many positions that you need to pass a background. And they're all doing background checks now. Usually, once upon a time, you know, yeah, before I haven't looked for a job so damn long because of the paper in my business. But when I did, I remember maybe 5 of the top 10% would actually grill you. Do you have a felony record, or can you pass a background test? Now they're almost any legitimate corporation or someone that has more than one office in two different cities. If they're at that level or above, you're going for a criminal. So I don't qualify there. And then I've been thinking, how many people with criminal backgrounds can't get a decent job, and how does that affect the unemployment rate, et cetera, et cetera? And talking about a group of people that are leaving the job market, but there's such an underground economy. There's such an underground economy from which I'm very familiar with that no one pays taxes on. And that's that low class that I talk about living in. You know, you got your middle class, but you got your working class, and then you have your low class. The low class are the people who are gaming the system on one hand, and those who are gaming the system and probably got something on the other side. I've got 760. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Drew.
Hey, Drew. Nice to see you, man. Hey, is this the first time you heard me?
Yeah, this is actually the first time I've actually been back on Blog Talk for a little bit.
Oh, super. What city are you in?
I'm in Lansing, Michigan, the capital.
All right. Well, welcome to the ex-conservative radio, babe. What do you think of my rant? Am I over the top?
I didn't actually hear it. Actually, I was struggling to get back on your radio for some reason. like you've been sitting there talking about. Yeah, that's probably why I couldn't get on your radio show.
Yeah, no, you're a
younger guy. I've been hearing beats and everything. Do what?
Are you a younger guy?
I'm about 27, about to be 28 here pretty soon.
Happy birthday. What's on your mind, man?
You know, well, you're just sitting there talking about the government and everything, you know. This is really stressing that, you know, we're just looking at the government right now, how the government's doing us wrong and everything. But, ladies and gentlemen, do not take your eyes off of the people that are actually in your town. Consumers Energy was just out here three different times in less than 2 days.
Who was for 3 days? Who was out there?
Consumers Energy.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
Well, one of the guys came out here. You know, I understand that people's got to have a job, right?
Right.
No doubt. But this guy didn't know things from Adam or Eve, dude. He turned around and said there was six gas leaks. He only seen one, but as soon as he started spraying, there was six gas leaks. He turned around and continued to tell me that he was going to go get a lighter and light up. You know, we already had a fire. And, you know, I turned around and told this dude, I was like, no, thank you. I almost lost my life already. You know, now you want to go get a lighter and try to show me what's up? You know? But that shows you right there what unexperienced people are doing out here, you know. They get hired, and people
right.
that really want to work can't get hired, you know.
Right. what we've done is we've taken victims, people that have not earned it's all about competition. And the person that needs that good worker should be able to find that good worker. And that good worker should be able to get the job quicker than the bad worker.
Yeah. But these sound like people that don't really want to work, you know. I'm not saying this guy ain't well-educated. He might be. But, you know, just for the fact that he turned around and told me that, even I don't even got his kind of experience, and I've already know once you're around gas lines and it's leaking, you don't turn around and try to light up a lighter right beside it. Even I know that, you know. I wish I could work because I would go try to get this guy's job, you know.
Hey, well, I'm glad you called in and anytime. This is Tony Bonini, folks, for the ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona, where it's the culture stupid, playing the music that made, how shall I say, liberalism sexy, the music of the 60s, some of the best music you'll ever hear. Just don't let me be.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad, but don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, I seem to be bad. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. If I seem edgy,
thoughts like any other one. Sometimes I find myself long regretting some foolish thing, some little sinful thing I've done.
Happy birthday to Adam Cantor and Facebook friends. Kathy Ryan, happy birthday. David Nierhoon, happy birthday. Happy birthday to Todd Anderson, Mary Brannon, Lisa Pinelli, Jean Chancellor, Gary Argator, Douglas Gibbs, Donna Arthur. My Facebook friends were Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. How many Facebook friends does it take for you to give up one real friend? Can we play a little bit of Monopoly here? Maybe we should play Facebook where we can trade friends. Maybe we can buy off friends and enemies. Hey, wouldn't that be something? What do you think about Facebook becoming the game show? What about Facebook becoming the board game? How would it look? You know, Monopoly. We all know how Monopoly works. Maybe we could play Facebook. We could trade friends. We could be like, I'm getting crazy. Anyway, folks, welcome to your ex-conservative radio hour with Tony Venuti each and every day. So the stream says, reverse engineering understanding of how the pop culture has trampled on traditional culture. Brought to you live, man, from my own personal experiences, my own heartache, my own living in the streets. Oh, for if you don't know evil, how can you possibly understand it? You cannot. You cannot. No more am I going to try to tell a woman how I feel to be pregnant than you out there who have never lived evil, thinking you really understand what's going on in the world today. You have no clue. You've been placed into a major bag of tricks, myths, and fantasies. We've been told over and over and over that reality is merely perception. Bill O'Reilly from Fox News. Oh, what would we do without that conservative station? Oh, Fox is just so conservative. Although, hey, it's a double-edged thought here. It's a double-edged thought. I love Fox because if it wasn't for Fox, the Fox that's in the hen house right now, the Fox that's in the White House right now, we'd be usurped already. We already know that we're on our way there, but we might be able to turn the corner. We might be able to turn this Titanic around if Obama simply relinquishes his power. This is Michelle Malkin talking about, nothing in particular about how Romney's not a nice, you know, I'm so tired of hearing Romney say of Obama, oh, he's really a nice guy, you know, he's really, give me a break. The thing that's changed phenomenally between 2008 and 2012 that we don't have to rely on Barack or Michelle Obama and their Alinsky-eyed storytellers, but here's Michelle in her own words.
Fortunately, Roy, again, I don't want to get into too deep in the weeds here, but this is very simple, Michelle. And it seems to me that on every measure, the president fails, and on every account, those that are deeply, almost hypnotically entranced by Obama they go back to some excuse. There's always an excuse.
Well, yeah, and one of the main talking points they use is the one that Tamara just invoked, which is that average people, ordinary people, just don't understand. And this is the same sort of conversation.
That's not what I said, Michelle.
Well,
that's not what I said.
Average people just don't really understand the story.
Really, the average person isn't so excited about Mitt Romney. The average person knows that they're actually coming back to work, they're getting jobs, their foreclosure rates are down. There are certain things that people are seeing. The person next door, nobody understands why
they know
it.
If I can finish.
Let Michelle finish. That's a good idea.
Okay. The thing that has changed phenomenally between 2008 and 2012 is that we don't have to rely on Barack and Michelle Obama and their Alinskyite storytellers in the mainstream media and all of their operatives to set the tone and the storyline for this election. That is what underscores all of the victories that we've seen over the last 4 years on the right. Conservatives online are not accepting these fables that have been shoved down our throat. The idea that Obama has brought us out of the light when he's plunged us deeper into the sinkhole of debt, that somehow Obama has opened up Washington, D.C. to make it as transparent and open as possible when they've done all of these deals and subverted the rule of law behind closed doors, that somehow Obama is more likable than any Republican and that somehow he is a nice guy. I hate hearing this from Mitt Romney. He's got to get this talking point out of his mouth. Barack Obama is not a nice guy. He has dealt brutally with the right, with people like Paul Ryan and brave Republicans who have been calling him to the carpet on all of the disgusting culture of corruption that has reigned, and that is the darkness that we have to get out of in November.
Let me ask Tamara one question. Put the Bin Laden issue aside because I think it was a gutsy decision, but I think he needed to support the intelligence gathering.
You know, one of the things that annoys me with these discussions, one of the stories that I'm tired of hearing about is the notion that Obama got Osama bin Laden. Obama got Osama. Well, wasn't that sort of like automatic pilot? Wasn't Osama gotten by automatic pilot? The only thing Obama could have done was stopped it. So are we to say he did a fantastic job not to stick his leg out and trip something? Huh? Hey, what a great job, man! You didn't put the stop light on! Wow, you're really brave! Yeah, I would have liked to even seen him try if that would have been the right decision, because he wouldn't have done it then either. No way, brave nothing. He had no way out but to approve. How can you not have approved Osama being taken out when Obama had his chance? He was on autopilot. He was on automatic pilot. I am tired of hearing this notion of Obama. You got to give him one credit. He took out Osama. He did it on automatic pilot, you idiots. What's he going to say? Well, let me take care. And not only that, if you backtrack it, if you seek out the truth, you'll see that Obama stood in the way of Bush's policies that were the very policies that enabled Osama to go dead. Yeah, Osama went dead. Yeah, Osama went dead on us. Yeah. How do you, pretty soon we'll hear that in the media, you know, like take a listen. Pretty soon it's going to be going dead. You know, we've been going missing, right? Now we're going to be going dead. That's how they bastardize the words. I'm checking my language. Got my mother here. I stream my mother with me because, you know, my mother's tough love keeps me in line. So I use that sort of paradigm. But is Obama to be applauded for taking Osama out? Really? Come on. It's this whole business about, we don't talk about Obama like that. He's black, and he's been a victim. At least he represents blacks who are victims, at least to the degree that we've been able to convince all of you people to believe that they're victims, and you should all be feeling guilty for the past 50 years. Shh, we don't talk about Obama. his likability quotient is higher than will somebody vote for him one way or the other. What is that about? What is that about? Oh, I'm not going to let anybody say or hear me say I don't like Obama because I don't want to be called a racist. Do you think that shuts a lot of people up? What's going to happen, do you think, when they get into the voting booths? You think those people that say, I like you, will be liked enough to say, I'll vote for you? Oh, I like, you know, hey, I've sold a lot of things in my life. And a lot of selling is the idea of them buying the person doing the selling. You don't only better have a good product, but you're going to like the person you're getting the product from. See, too many of us in the light-skinned mode, so often referred to as white. I'm Italian, thank you. I'm not a white Hispanic. I'm not a light Hispanic. I'm not a light black. I'm not a white black. Remember, labels are used to divide. Labels are used to divide. The fact that we don't like him, even though we're convincing ourselves that we do because he deserves a pass because he's black, he's a victim, doesn't preclude the fact that we don't like the product that he's presenting to us. Remember, when something is sold to you, you buy it because you like the product. But you might not buy it if you don't like the person that's selling it to you. So what people are going to say in a poll that's open for everybody to see as they're being photographed and videotaped and being made aware of by who is giving these answers is a lot different than being in the secrecy, the anonymity of the voting booth, don't you think? So check your premise. Check your premise. Number 27 of the Communist Manifesto affects us so many ways in our present day. The Communist Manifesto is but a business plan. It's what's in people's minds, hearts, for the long-term win. Not the short-term gain, but the long-term win. We've been made aware of this Communist Manifesto officially since 1963 by having this read out into the congressional record as real stuff, you know, as real stuff that isn't, there's no mistake in it. This is the plan for the communists to take over America. Number 27. Infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. Oh, no, we won't give people a religious crutch. No, 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 but. When we're all tripping over each other to talk and waste our time about a mega-million-dollar jackpot, that when queried to liberals on why you would want to take $1 and $5 and people out of, oh, to give them hope, to give them hope. Well, give the average person hope. What's wrong with $10 million? Why should I participate now in this lottery that's worth $600 million when with each day passing, my odds become less and the dollar I'm investing by definition is less because my odds are less? Isn't winning $10 million enough? Why don't you instill upon me the common sense to say, wait a minute, why not put a dollar that you can barely afford to buy a lottery ticket on for a $10 million prize when you'll have much higher odds of winning than on something ridiculous like this mega jackpot? Why would we instill you to do something like this unless perhaps we weren't out for your best interests? So how does something like, you know, infiltrating the churches and replacing it with social, how does that affect us, huh?
all roads lead back to Marx, folks. This is just incredible. And we've got the conversation on the left that tries at their best to create a normalcy, that anything about religion is just like stupid, old fuddy-dud. Come on, man, that isn't the way we think here in America. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's still quite a bit of us. Just because you're 10 or 20% that have the ability to make the world feel like it's 80% because of your over and over 24/7 NBC, ABC, CBS, New York Times, LA Times, the whole nine yards. You've got to, you know, when I was young in the 50s and the 60s, and I saw those three TV networks always have the same news within moments of each other. You know, the first story was always the first story on all three networks that supposedly were competing. And the second story was always the same. I mean, it was always about 80 or 90%, I felt, that they had it mirrored. I mean, to the T, right? And I remember scratching my head as a kid all my life, all through those years, all through those 20, 30, 40 years, scratching my head saying, wait a minute. Really? Really? You mean there's no collaboration? That this is just by accident? Well, now we know differently, don't we? Or we should. This means that particularly when you look at Joe McCarthy and you look at the Venona Papers and you bring forth the point I just mentioned about how come these seemingly independent news operations always had, what, maybe, first of all, they had very little for us to know about. That which you don't know won't hurt you, right? And what we didn't know about, we only heard about, what, 1 hour a day? One hour, a half a day. What was it? In the morning we had news at 6 o'clock, and then at night, at the night hour. And that wasn't on until, I think, the 60s. I might not have all this right. And you tell me, talk about errors of omission, talk about tell me what best to keep out of people's minds. I've been watching this. And I've also been watching the lack of honest dialogue coming out, even in the most conservative of talkers, the ones that are on the radio. And it's all because in the final analysis, they're owned. Limbaugh's owned. Savage is owned. Levin is owned. Oh, they are threading a needle. But why no questions and challenges? I think it's time we pick at the media. To the power of 10. I'll tell you how to do that when I come right back. This is Tony Venuti in All Things Sunny. The music of the 60s. Liberalism, sexy.
The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon, and I can't sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got this sunny afternoon. Save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying to break me. And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury, blazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime, in the summertime, in the summertime.
My girlfriend's run up with my car and gone back to her mom.
Now I'm sitting here, sipping at my ice cold beer, blazing on the sunny afternoon. Help me.
That made it such an exciting time.
The winds of change were just starting to blow so strong.
The music played such a great part. I think without the music of the 50s and the 60s, without the music of the counterculture, the anti-establishment, without the music that the left could co-op, that Marxist communists, that cultural Marxists could co-op, to give us permission, to give us children of the 50s and the 60s permission to hate our parents, gave us permission to disrespect all authority. All of this brought to you by the Communist Manifesto. Number 41, emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influences of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and the retardation of children to suppressive influence of parents. You've seen just recently how we're taking away people's lunch boxes and force feeding them at school. Did you know there's areas around the country where the kids are eating, every kid available is now eating breakfast at school, not eating breakfast at home. And pretty soon, some of these school programs are starting to compel the sense of guilt that, oh, having breakfast at the cafeteria in the morning means you can't afford to eat breakfast at home. So we don't want you to feel discouraged. We're going to start serving you breakfast in the classrooms. We're starting to see, folks, a little push to take these free breakfasts in public schools. I mean, it's all about the breakdown of the family. These aren't nice people that are doing this kind of thing, breaking down our traditions like this. These are not nice people. Karl Marx was not a nice person. Number 16, use technical decisions of the courts to weaken basic American institutions by claiming their activities violate civil rights. Civil rights. I gotta think it's more like civil wrongs. That's what's happened here. Obama is not a nice guy. We heard Michelle Malkin talk about how fed up she is.
The same mentality Romney demonstrates allows for the likability of the quotient, likability quotient to be skewed. That same mentality of being afraid not to dislike Obama skews the likability quotient. And I've been telling you, wait till it's time to vote in the booth where it's private. All you white people will be ridiculed. Not if they can't see you for not liking him because he's black. No, you won't be ridiculed. Don't worry about it. This has been the white man's legacy since the 50s. Shh, we don't talk about black people being bad. You know, they were slaves once, and we did it to them. I've watched your Caucasians bite on this for all too long. It's time to wake up. Thank you, Michelle, is what I say. Am I a racist? Hell yes, we're all racist. Am I a bigot? No. We don't judge by the color of our skin. That doesn't mean we can't be forced to be familiar with you, as in family. That being more prone to be one of the same kind than having somebody of different, if we're more prone to be with someone more like us, does that make us racist? Yes, it doesn't make us a bigot, though. You get it? It doesn't make us a bigot. Get over it. I'm Italian. I can speak this stuff. Don't take away my identity. Don't take away my identity. Oh, God, no. All right. What else I got for you? A few things. I got a few things. What's Pelosi say here? Okay. You know, this Occupy Wall Street movement is going to be the wedge that when it comes time to voting is going to be out there locked and loaded, ready to do some damage. The Occupy Wall Street movement is going to target the Tea Party, right? But who is the Tea Party? How are they going to target those that they don't know? Oh, they can go to their meetings. But that's about it. Because isn't the Tea Party really a no-target entity? Isn't the Tea Party really almost like a intangible? They do come together in those meetings or when it comes time to vote, but you can never find them grouped. The media will have us believe that they no longer exist. Since 2010, where's the Tea Party been? What, because we're not making disgusting pests of ourselves like you Occupy Wall Street clowns? Perhaps we're too busy being successful in life. Perhaps we're too busy doing what we need to do so that we don't have to feel discouraged and being taken upon by those willing to empower us against those that are the mere producers. Yeah, we're just mere producers here. We're just 20% of the population. We're just 20% of the population, but we happen to do about 80% of the work. And you don't bother us because you have bigger numbers. Is that right? Oh, Vorp, you would ask me that. Vorp says, what schools are serving? And I'll tell you, I heard a Fox report. I bet you if you Google it, you'll find it, okay? Maybe I should do that during the break. But it went pretty deep in terms of, how shall I say, they were talking about some kids were eating twice because they would, some school districts were across the board giving children, everybody in a given city, in a given school district, everybody free breakfast. You didn't even need to be special, you know, like needy. So I guess the way they got around calling anybody needy was everybody's needy. If everybody's needy, then no one's needy. Just everybody gets free breakfast. So now we're feeding everybody a free breakfast, but what's happening is some kids are eating twice. I know I would have never turned away my mother breakfast. So my mother always made me a nice little breakfast. Well, not always. Sometimes we had things as simple as cocoa and bread. You know, I dip white bread, red Italian bread into cocoa. Italian bread from the night before because it wasn't ever as fresh as the first day. You know, you got to eat Italian bread the right way, you know, only once. But she would do the eggs and things with toast. But she would do the French toast and she would do the pancakes. I didn't like oatmeal. I never was in a warm cereal until I was forced into it, eating it in the army and eating it in prison where I was forced fed warm cereal. But see, the point is, as hungry kids that will always eat if you put food in front of them, some of these kids were now eating twice. So now we got these schools. See, it's all about, man, it's all about making us slaves. It's all about feeding into our hopes of the world owing us a living. So when people think they owe you something and they give it to you, you think you have it coming. I want bacon and eggs, orange juice and toast. Forbes says, well, liberals, no, I'm sorry, pal. You didn't have to eat their meal. It's going to be meal. Pretty soon, their free meal is going to be meal. It's going to be made of meal, you know what I'm saying? Like they feed to the cows and it's all a hush. I was just thinking of my cats and my dogs as I feed them today. You know, we all give them little human food snacks, right? But I got to be careful. Otherwise, they'll get spoiled and not want to eat from the trough, right? But, you know, animals really got to be stupid. Or at least human beings really get spoiled, because can you imagine having to eat the same thing day in and day out? Day in and day out. I get philosophers, hey man, how you doing? He said, as a liberal, I eat chained down calf and the liver of the force-fed chicks with their feet nailed to the bottom of their crate. all these rules and regulations on food. Isn't it something when you really get into the depths? When you really get into the meat and the potatoes, excuse the pun. The double entendre, the play on words. When you really get right down to the nuts and bolts of how this country is run, and the idea that of free competition is what we're really made all about. But when you look at how many oil companies there are, just a handful, how many media companies there are, just a handful, how many food conglomerates there are, just a handful, the whole idea about competition is an illusion, isn't it? Is it illusion? Oh, that's a good one, man. Hey, Volpe just came up with a good one. Liberal means when you want to let others how to live. You know, I got a saying, live and let live. Live and let live. And how about this? Live, but for the grace of God go I. And how about this one? This too shall pass. That's the only three things I need to live with, right? Live and let live, man. Leave me alone. Yes, I understand there's some moral imperatives we have to put in place, and we'll do that. I'm all about that. Got to have the moral imperative, because without the moral imperative, we become evil. Oh, yeah, we become dirty, we become filthy, we become ugly, we become dark, we become negative. We become opposite to that which is opposite of positive. It's natural law. It stands to reason. You can't get past it. Anyway, you cut it, our whole being is based upon natural laws. Religion was just the institutionalization of those ideas brought forth in which a populace could get it together to understand what needs to be done. And they were leaders that through tough love made it ugly for people to accept. And liberalism came in and said, no, 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 oh, come on, let's not put all those forces oh, good upon us? No. Let's be able to do anything that we want to do. After all, we all know that. Why do people do anything? What's the first reason, the very first reason that people do anything? The very first. It's because they can. Because they can. See, now this, you're going to have me push back against you a little bit here. See, Catholicism
essentially broke Western civilization. Did you know that, Novus? Now, all the details is where it gets ugly. But did you know this fact that Western civilization was built behind Catholicism? Not just, not just Christianity, but Catholicism. Absolute homongo, baby. Google that. Because I'm not going to get into it right now, but Google Western civilization and the Catholic Church. You'll be amazed. See, I was brought up a Catholic. I was brought up with manners. I was brought up with respect. I was brought up with the idea that positive energy is much better than negative energy. And that even though negative energy must exist and one must also be aware of its usage selfishly. Oh, boy. Folks, you're listening to Tony Venuti, your experiential social philosopher, who is telling you that conservatism is cool, that owning up to your own errors are cool, that experiencing your own errors, regardless of, doesn't matter, it's cool, as long as you're willing to say when you tuned this caught in a cookie jar, okay, boss, now what do you want me to do? You know, accept it, you know what I mean? Accept the rules that got you down. You got caught up in the trick bag, just accept them. No whining, no crying. Come on, I'm tired of all that crap. Man, I'm so tired of you sisters I used to spend time with in prison. They'd get busted for the first time. Their parents bailed them out. They bailed them out again, bailed them out again. They kept on doing the drugs, making their little petty crimes, getting involved in the street gangs because they thought it was cool to hang around the streets and be with the tough guys. And then they'd find themselves in prison, and they'd whine, and they'd cry, and they'd moan and groan. And I said, look, cut it out. I'd actually say, hey, John over there, hey, did you know what you did was wrong before you did it, and now that you're in jail, you're crying, but did you know it was wrong before? Well, yeah, but the police, they didn't treat me right. Well, you got caught up in that trick bag. You know what? Yeah, I think you brought up a good point, Novus. But they're being good for the sake of being good, and they're being good so they can get something good out of it. That's called rational self-interest, man. That's called rational self-interest. What better reason is there? What better reason? This is a good one, man. You hit it right on the nail. See, this is where you got to think. Google Ayn Rand and rational self-interest, okay? Google Ayn Rand and rational self-interest. That's why a free marketplace works. That is why capitalism works. There is no better reason to do something than to get something good out of it for yourself. Look at that. Look, that's what. Okay, hang on a second. I get your point, though. Because from a religious standpoint, from a Christian, from a charitable standpoint, let's just say that, from a charitable standpoint, when the person who is out to do good for themselves, for the good that it gets them, they're usually in a position now to be able to take the extra that they have. Those greedy clowns. Those extra that they have to help those who are less fortunate, but they're going to be looking out for those that are less fortunate, not for someone gaming them, not for someone gaming them by saying, buy me, give me, I need, because you owe me a living, not because of what media has told us that you should have your hand out just because. No, man, if you're lazy, if you made some bad lifestyle choices, hey, that's on you. That's on you, but don't make me the performer. Don't make me who has the rational self-interest to do the best that I can. Let me tell you what you do know what an entrepreneur is. You just described an entrepreneur by describing to somebody that is doing good just so they can get something good out of it. That's the ultimate.
philosophy says I'm good to get something good out of it, even if it's just setting a standard of reciprocity. I believe in reciprocity. I believe in taking care of those that take care of those, knowing full well that for each yin there isn't a yang. You look at the big picture, not the short picture. You might do something for me today. I might do something for you next year. We don't have to do a tit for tat. You got it? We do it selflessly, knowing full well that we're going to count up. I'm going to anyway. That's how friends sort of do. You know, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. But we don't scratch each other's back with the condition that you scratch my back. We're not setting you up to do something for you. And if we do, that's called business. And if we do, that's called doing business. A quid pro quo. You see, our equality comes in from the time that we own. Our equality comes from the value that we put on the time that we own, the time that we live in, the 24 hours of today. We own it, right? I own my 24 hours. What are you doing today? What did you do to bring value to yourself? And it doesn't always have to be monetary value. It can be whatever else that is characteristically important to you from which money can't buy. Huh? Understand the value of happiness. Understanding the help, understanding the value of the sense of well-being. Understand the value of imparting words of wisdom that you don't hear very often. Huh? Are you a giver or are you a taker? This is what it all comes down to. You got to be selfish, man, to a degree. Otherwise, we'll look at it like this. Let's take the free marketplace and let's make a job, okay? I'm an entrepreneur. Right now, you know, I've been looking for work. I've been having a hard time. I'm actually going back to making some football schedules for some high schools that I did 15 years ago. The football teams do not have a laminated schedule that they can put in their wallet when they go buy their tickets that every parent can pick up when they sign up for school. They don't have one. So there's a need, isn't there? There's a perceived need. Oh, they can live without it. They don't need it. It's not like water, air, or food. They don't need it. But they'd certainly be able to use it, wouldn't they? They'd certainly be able to capitalize on it, wouldn't they? They'd certainly be able to enhance their experience, knowing full well that when they don't know when their son's next game is, they could pull this thing out of the wallet and see their schedule. Now, what's in it for me? Why did I do this? What am I, a charity? Well, I gave them these lemonade. No, man, I got something out of it. On the back of that card were a bunch of businesses offering discounts. Oh, and the discounts were giving something back to the reader. 10% off, 20% off, a couple bucks off, whatever, right? But the merchants, you see, here's the deal. The merchants were going to win when they got business. The school already won because they got something to give away with their name on it to remind them on coming to the games at no cost. And I'm going to win because I'm going to charge money to the advertisers. I'm going to charge money for the advertisers to participate in. Since I can't find my own job, I'm going to make my own job. That's what I'm saying. The economy is baloney, man. The economy is personal, just like all politics are personal or local. The economy is personal. All politics are local. All economies are personal. Because if you got a job and you're doing good, you don't care if it's raining, do you? You don't care if the unemployment rate's 12%, 14%, unless you all just got caught up in it. You know, got caught up in the arguing with it. But deep down, it doesn't matter. Gee, does it? Come on, give me a break. But don't get us all riled up behind this false notion. No, what matters is our moral code, on the lack thereof. So this rational self-interest, now here's the deal. I know it. I just know what's going to happen. Last time I did this, I had 15 schools. I had 9 advertisers on each school, but I also had 2 or 3 people working for me at that time. My God, if I get as successful as I did 15 years ago, I might be selfishly compelled to find more workers. Oh, I might not be able to offer them a generous starting wage, but I might be able to offer them a commission, or I might be able to offer a combination of both. And who really knows until I know?
until I get there. And right now it won't matter till it matters. But through my own rational self-interest, will it get to the point to where it's not a bad thing? Being selfish. As long as it's rational. Rational and moral. And of course, anything being equal, I'm the perfect idiot. You don't see me with a priest's collar on. What's going to be is going to be. It is America. We are allowed to be any way we wish to be. From a moral imperative, we've got all kinds of rules we can break without having broken any laws. So you can be, if you wish, who you are. But my question in the bigger picture is, are you a good witch or are you a bad witch? I'll be right back.
Conservative radio hour from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day, and here's Newt Gingrich speaking about the impeachment of judges.
It's for to start the following conversation on economics. So I'll just give this to you because it's a wonderful tool. I tell every audience, I'm going to give you half of a sentence. You give me the other half. And it's exactly like 2 plus 2 equals 4. If you can't afford to buy a house, what's the second half? How many of you agree if you can't afford to buy a house, don't buy it? Raise your hand. I'm serious. Now think about this. For 25 years, we've lived a lie. For 25 years, the official policy of the United States has been if you can't afford to buy a house, we won't look at your credit rating. We won't require a down payment. We won't make you pay any capital, any principal for 3 years. We'll give you a below market.
Captain, my captain. Like a child to a parent. Isn't it the parent who doesn't tell us to go borrow something if we can't afford to buy something?
The parent doesn't tell us to go take out a loan. The parent tells us to go get a job.
At interest rate, you do that to one person, they go bankrupt, it's a personal tragedy. You do it to a million people, it's a national crisis. But have you heard any national political leader say, you know, the entire economic problem we've got right now is a cultural problem. We don't want to reward saving and investing. We don't want to reward working. We don't want to encourage being prudent.
It's the culture, stupid!
We don't want to tell the truth about your finances. We don't want to make you be a responsible adult. And you think you can run a country this way? So now let me apply 2 plus 2 equals 4 to our current problem. There's more and more evidence coming out that the deeply troubled non-Rotarian who killed a number of Americans at Fort Hood. I'm only using politically acceptable language. We realize, many of you will understand, that recently when we've arrested people in Denver, Detroit, and New York, as well as the troubled person in Fort Hood, they all shared one common characteristic. They did not belong to Rotary. And so I've begun to develop a brand new profiling system built around non-Rotarians. Because I wouldn't want to have any kind of profiling system which was politically insensitive, lacked clarity, or focused in on things like, it's turning out this guy was routinely communicating with a radical cleric in Yemen. And the National Security Agency knew it. And the FBI knew it. And they were all standing around going, well, maybe it's a research project. Now, maybe before 9/11, you could say maybe it's a research project. This is madness. And now you have an attorney general whose basic position is, let's have a public trial under American criminal defense models with their lawyers having access or demanding access or suggesting access. Frankly, somebody should introduce a resolution of impeachment. Let me illustrate my point, because I think it's why the concept of replace rather than reform is so important. I don't want to be told that appointing an attorney general whose law firm was pro bono defending terrorists makes sense. I don't want to be told that when he appoints lawyers whose law firms defend a terrorist pro bono, it makes sense. I don't want to be told that people who care more about the rights of terrorists than the lives of Americans should be allowed to serve in the Justice Department of the United States. One of the reasons the American people have not yet mobilized to the full power of their sovereign capacity is because they don't yet have leadership that's prepared to say, this is real. And if you believe this is real, and you believe we could have lose an entire city, and you believe that these people are needlessly endangering the United States, then we need to establish in the House and Senate, and we need to establish across the country, a standard of behavior which makes it clear that this is not a game. This is not politics. This is not business as usual. And I'll give you one closing example. I believe we need a profound fight about religious liberty. I believe that fight became unavoidable when the Ninth Circuit Court ruled that saying one nation under God as part of the pledge was unconstitutional. I believe it is a sign of a fascist mentality that the ACLU has filed a lawsuit about a cross in the middle of the Mojave Desert. I mean, the idea that a cross in the middle of the desert is a threat to the mindset of secular fanatics tells you almost everything you need to know. And I'm a historian, so my reaction to this is to read history. In 1802, the Jeffersonians passed the Judiciary Act of 1802. Jefferson knew it.
I mean, I don't know about you, gang, but how can you not like this guy? How can you even fault him? I mean, I'm scratching my head loco trying to figure out what people don't see in this guy.
Are we that blinded by emotion?
Fair amount about the Constitution. Madison knew vastly more. They were both in the administration. The Judiciary Act of 1802 abolishes 18 out of 35 federal judges. Doesn't impeach them, abolishes them. Says, we're not paying you. You can't go to, there's no court. Several of them said this was not, this was inappropriate. It's a lifetime appointment. They went to the remaining 17 judges to file suit, and the remaining 17 judges said, have you lost your mind? If I accept the suit, they're going to abolish my court. This is, by the way, precisely what Hamilton and Madison wrote in the Federalist Papers, that any time the weakest of the three branches takes on the two elected branches, if the two elected branches are serious, they will, in fact, guarantee the defeat of the judicial branch. Now, as many of you know, I am a moderate. So I would only propose not to abolish over half of all the judges, which is what Jefferson did. I would merely propose to abolish the Ninth Circuit and re-recruit. Because if we're serious, that's the right reaction. You show me a judge so ignorant they believe that it's unconstitutional to say one nation under God, I'll tell you a judge who shouldn't be drawing money from the taxpayers. It's a very straightforward relationship. Remember in closing, the reason I wrote wonderful book that Gay helped inspire at Mount Vernon, To Try Men's Souls, is because we thought, when we sat down and discussed it a year and a half ago, that we would get to a point where we have high unemployment, foreign enemies, and a radical administration. And people would want to know, what is it Americans once did? And how is it we became American? And on Christmas Day, 1776, Washington's army had collapsed from 30,000 in Brooklyn in September to 2,500. Less than one out of every 1,000 Americans had the courage to be with Washington on Christmas Day. Of that 2,500, one-third did not have boots. They wrapped their feet in burlap, and they left a trail of blood, marching the 9 miles to Trenton. Washington decided to cross an icy river at night in a snowstorm, to march at night to surprise 800 professional German soldiers, win a surprise victory, capture all 800, and reestablish the legitimacy of the revolution. 2 weeks later, he had 15,000 volunteers. The password that night was victory or death. I want you to go from here after this weekend and look every successful person you know in the eye, and look every patriot you know in the eye and tell them there are young men and women risking their lives all around this planet in uniform, in the State Department, in the intelligence community, so we can be free. Don't tell me how much you've given. Don't tell me how tired you are. Don't tell me how frustrating it is. This country was created by people who were willing to say victory or death while marching in burlap bags in the middle of a snowstorm. We're going to have to find those people again. We're going to have to run people for 513,000 offices in both parties. We're going to have to isolate and crush the secular socialist left, and we're going to have to replace their failed system with systems that succeed. This is work George Washington would have approved of, and this is work you need to take seriously for the next 3 years so we can give our children and grandchildren the greatest, freest, and most prosperous country in history.
Folks, that was Newt Gingrich, and like I said, I don't get it. I don't get how anybody can't like that guy. I mean, what did he say wrong? It's really all about that comfort zone, isn't it? It's really all about that status anxiety we all feel, because are you willing to die for your country? I've said that I am as early as when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. I think I saw one too many John Wayne movies. I remember thinking I didn't really have much else except the opportunity to be anything I wanted to be, that I learned early on from my mother, was only available in this country.
Lisa, Lisa, Lisa in Los Angeles, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Question or comment, please.
I have to say I agree with you, Mike. When people like Susan Sarandon and the Dixie Chicks voice their opinions, on a war, and we bash them. That's suppressing their freedom of speech, and that makes us no better.
Wait. Having an opinion about them, having an opinion about their idiocy, is suppressing their freedom of speech. You are stupider than they are. You're a big dummy from Los Angeles. I'd like to give you an award, idiot. That's not suppressing their freedom of speech. That's telling them they're morons.
I don't care what you said.
You're a moron. Just because I disagree with them doesn't mean I'm suppressing their speech, lady. Okay, thanks for the call. I don't care how you got on. You're wrong. This is the standard line now. What's his name over there in Hollywood? What's his name? I forget his name. The husband, Mr. Susan Sarandon? I've never seen him in a movie. I don't even want to know his name. Now he's getting up there cloaking himself in the First Amendment, saying, I guess that my freedom of speech is being curtailed. Yeah, Mr. Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins. Great. We're not suppressing your freedom of speech. We're showing you there are consequences for your stupidity, sir. We didn't go out there and put tape over your mouth. That's ridiculous. Telford in Las Vegas, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? All right. Hello, you're on the Savage Nation? Well, we're doing great on the call screener out there. I guess my call screen is not alive. Jerry in Detroit, Michigan, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael.
Yes, sir.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you
for taking my call. I have a question. It's not rhetorical. I mean this seriously. Why does the left always defend these theocratic, patriarchal Muslim nations who are terribly aggressive and brutal and always attack their own country? I don't understand it for the life
of me. Well, what you're saying is, why do they hate Christianity?
Exactly.
Why do they attack the church? Why do they insist with foaming mouth that we have a separation of church and state here, but they are absolutely in love with Islam? Is that the question?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think the answer is because they want to bring it all down, man. Anything they can do to bring down Christianity and Judaism is good for them. Because